Wham! Talk 1600. You're catching the drift. Conservative talk. Intelligent conversations on local, state, and national issues with Gary Wellings, chief editor of the Current newspaper and Current online. Stand up for. Join in the conversation at 734-822-1600. 822-1600. And now, your host, Gary Wellings.
Good Sunday morning, and welcome back to The Drift. Dark outside. Guest in the studio, John Hargenrader. John, welcome. Well, we've got some good things to talk about. It was a busy week. Right to Work was just all over the news. It was kind of funny the way it came out. You know, you started seeing the commercials on TV, then the protests started. One of those crazy things. But let's take care of business before we get too far into anything. Welcome to The Drift. This is how we recap the news of the week and give us some opinions on it. You can contact us at Gary at The Daily Drift if you don't feel like calling in. The call-in line again, 734-822-1600. And you can go to thedailydrift.com to read all the stuff we put online for you every week, every day actually. And there are links at currentonline.com, C-O-U-R-A-N-T-online.com. So let's take care of our sponsor this half hour is The Rock Shop, excuse me, located at Goffredson Road, just off of M14 and North Territorial Roads. Marco and Helena Scappaticci do a wonderful job running a hardscape business. Now, if you haven't been out to The Rock Shop, you really need to get there because they've got some cool stuff. They've got the best selection of natural pavers, manufactured pavers, wall-retaining, wall-building materials, and great fountain statuary garden benches. All that stuff that you'd really want to have in your garden. Wow. Sorry about that. Their phone number is 734-455-5560. They're winding down for the season, so you can get some great deals on stuff. Or you can go to rock-shop, shoppe.com. They've even got a little desk. Have you ever been to The Rock Shop, John?
I have not.
I tell you, it's worth going in. You go in and you see all the stuff, but in the back room there, Marco's got this little shop with a bunch of crazy geologic oddities. I mean, stones that glow, stones, you know, the geodes and stuff that you see. Great place to take the kids in just if you want to see some really cool stuff. So, but 734-455-5560. Stop in and see The Rock Shop because one of the things they do best is they teach you how to install your hardscape so that you're not stuck fiddling and trying to figure out how to do it. And they do that for free. So 734-455-5560. So this morning we're going to talk Right to Work, first off. We've got another guest calling in. Another columnist, actually, for The Current. Now, John, you've been writing with The Current for a
couple months
now. You ran for county commissioner in
County Commissioner, District 9.
As a libertarian,
yeah. Against Mr. Gary Childs, who's a wonderful man and I think is going to do a great job in the county commissioner.
That's great. Now, what did you end up with a percent for?
18, I think, is where it came in at.
Okay, not bad for a third-party candidate, right?
Not bad at all.
Okay, yeah, real good. So, you know, you've been on the show here now with me, I don't know, three times maybe?
I think this is the third time,
Third time. So, and your opinions always struck me. I was telling Jack Belisle earlier, who's calling in, that you always come up with a different take on something that I hadn't thought of, you know, and it always tweaks my melon, so to speak, you know. So glad to have you on and glad to have you writing. And now hopefully you're going to write more, that the Daily Drift website is upgraded a little bit.
Yeah, I really like to do that. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I think you've got some valuable opinions, and they do. It really makes me think in a different manner when I read some of the stuff. You know, it sets me back a pace, and I say, really, I didn't think about that, you know, which is what this show is about, too. I don't want people thinking I'm just espousing some conservative viewpoint. I mean, I try to be common sense, so if there's something that I'm not doing, I'd love to hear from the listeners. I'd love to hear from you. I'd love to hear from people, you know. So I think that's what we do. We try to listen as well as talk.
Yeah.
So Right to Work has been talked about for moons in Michigan, if not years. And all of a sudden, after the election, boom, we're getting it. Rick Snyder's the one that's a big change for me. He, you know,
shock.
contrary to some of the reports on TV I noticed this week, they say he was always against it. No, he was never against it. He said it wasn't a priority. So even, you know, Fox News was saying that. And I'm like, That's not true. He was never against it. He just said it wasn't a priority for him. You know, he didn't want whatever the reasons were. I won't second guess him. But something obviously pushed him over the edge recently, and I'd love to be the fly in the room in that conversation. We have Jack Belisle. I'm assuming, Derek, I don't have my computer up and running. Jack, is that you?
Yeah, I'm here, Derek.
Okay, great. You're in the room here with us. We've got John Hargenrader in the studio with us. So the three of us are going to talk a little bit about Right to Work. But before we even get into that now, you've been writing for the Current, about a year now, Jack?
Yeah, it's been, I kind of got my feet wet with writing about politics and the economy with letters to the editor with the Southline paper and the news in the Free Press, and I was fortunate enough to pick up one of your papers one day and, take it the next step further as far as, getting an article written. And I've always been interested in, government and politicians, and, when you really get into government and see that, there's a lot of empty suits up there, wouldn't know common sense if it bit them in the behind, and sometimes they believe the truth is annoying. It kind of grinds on you, and you want to write about it.
Right, absolutely. So, well, I'm glad you did because, and you are now a regular columnist, and will be writing more regularly with the Daily Drift, and so we want people to know you can go to the Daily Drift and get not just the links that I put on there every day to the stories that you need to know, but now you're going to get more of that common sense opinion from some of the brightest guys that I've actually been lucky enough. And I do thank the Lord, actually, for meeting you guys and getting a chance to work with you, because you guys have some stellar writing, I think. We have a pretty deep bench now, and I'm so glad that you are able to join us and do what you do. So, let's talk a little bit about Right to Work, Jack. John and I were just talking about Rick Snyder's not a complete reversal, but a sudden impetus to get him involved in this. What's your take on the Right to Work passing this week?
Well, I suppose, Right to Work at this juncture was, probably a response to Proposition 2. You hate to think of it as a payback type of thing, but, it may have been waiting in the weeds. I think it's proved itself in Indiana. It's proved itself in Wisconsin. And I think what's happened in those states will play itself out here once the dust settles after the, people go home and have a chance to, let it set in and see how it's going to work.
Okay, so let's kind of explain. I think a lot of times those of us who are watching the news regularly, take it for granted that we know what Right to Work is, and a lot of people don't. So for the listeners, let's do this. Derek, let's run track one. This is Ann Schreiber from the Mackinac Center for Public Policy talking a little bit about what Right to Work is. Let's run this and put us all on the same page.
In Michigan, if you work for an employer that has a union, you have to pay that union, sometimes hundreds of dollars a year. You can opt out and avoid the dues, but the union is still going to hit you up for an administrative fee. And if you don't pay, you can be fired. Some of that money goes towards negotiating a worker contract, but a large chunk of it goes to big unions and politics, politics you might not support. Under a Right to Work law, Michigan workers would have the right to say no thanks. Unions would have to prove their worth, and they do. In states with Right to Work laws, unions do exist. Unions say they set the standard for pay and benefits for all workers, not just those in unions. Unions, however, cannot defy the laws of economics. Michigan learned that lesson the hard way when its economy tanked 7 years before the rest of the country. Here is where hundreds of workers at General Motors parked until they knocked the plant down not too long ago. Unions are now trying to defy the laws of economics in government. But taxpayers, including business, can only bear so much. They leave. In the last census, Michigan was the only state in the country to lose population. Taxpayers left behind are stuck with a bigger bill for less service. When companies move, right-to-work states are often the destination of choice. More business means more jobs. And when the demand for labor goes up, so do paychecks.
Okay, so in a nutshell, Right to Work is not destroying collective bargaining. because that's a federally protected law. So the state has no say over that.
And that's been the same since Harry Truman tried to veto the Taft-Hartley law, and it was overridden.
Right. So now, Jack, you support right to work.
Yes, pretty much so.
And I guess the things that bothered me most watching the news this week is when UAW President Bob King comes on and says, we're union busting. They're trying to bust the unions. Nobody's trying to bust the unions. I mean, for me, I look at it as actually better for the worker because you, A, have that choice. Now, I've been in a union before. I didn't get anything for the dues I paid. And I didn't even get the breaks that I was due because they didn't stand up to the company, you know. And so this, I think, will be good for the unions in a way. It won't be good for union leadership.
That's probably true. They're probably going to have to reconcile themselves to real economics.
Yeah, I think in the end, for the workers themselves, for the union members, the union leadership is now going to have to be more responsive. Wouldn't you think that, Jack, is going to add a little competition to the union delivery here?
And that, you know, to kind of follow up on the, you know, there was a writer for the Detroit News, Terry Bowman, is a UAW member.
Yeah, he's a union conservative, yeah.
He's been in there numerous times, and he is a union member that favors right to work. And he indicates, estimates, that about 40% of his union brothers object to their dues being used to support, you know, the political agenda that the union might have. And so I think that's kind of the, you know, that's a rub that, you know, is kind of a problem for the unions as well.
Right. And I guess I think it is that. It's that union support, the union leadership support of candidates who, let's take gun rights, for example. So many unions are contributing to the Democratic Party, to Barack Obama, to Debbie Stabenow, to people who may be anti-gun, and yet I got to imagine most blue-collar union guys are gun owners and hunters and who support their Second Amendment rights. You're not going to take those guns away from blue-collar guys. That's not going to happen. And yet they're being forced to pay dues, which go to the union leadership who then support the same politicians who are trying to take their guns. I mean, does it make any sense to you, John?
No, it doesn't. And, you know, there's a First Amendment right, obviously, that unions have, but their members don't have the same right within the union a lot of times to say what they actually want their money to be used for in that regard. So to me, part of that is empowering union members to say, like you said, this is what we charter you to do to really protect our interests and work with our employers on a negotiated agreement or whatever, and to get off into the fringe of, political agendas that have nothing to do with that actual element that union is there for. It seems kind of odd.
Right.
And I think that's really the reaction. It's their entry into large-scale national politics is really what's driven this.
Right.
And one has to wonder why they don't see that. I'm curious to see how it works out. I think there's a differentiation between industrial and private company sector unions and the relationship with management, and the problematic area that we get into now where public sector employers are more and more unionized. In that regard, the employer still has a certain level of rights we should extend to them, whereas if they want to run a closed shop because it's in their best interest to have a uniform contract with all their employees and it works good, they're still able to do that and not prevented from doing that. And we as citizens then should also be considered employers when it comes to public entities such as school, you know, teachers and things like that. And we should have those same rights. If we want to run an open shop with public sector employees, I think that's a very reasonable thing to do. And so I'm waiting to see how the courts afterwards, because, you know, once this law passes, there's going to be a bunch of court activity.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. In fact, we've got we'll hit this. We're going to skip this first break, Derek. We'll just roll through straight through. So, Jack, one of the things that bothers me is I got an email from Beth, a teacher up north in northern Michigan, and a friend of mine, and she was happy. She was ecstatic that this is going through because for years she has paid her dues and has seen teachers who aren't fulfilling their obligations. She has seen the bad eggs that have been protected by a union. And disagrees with her union dues paying for politics that she disagrees with. So she's been absolutely ecstatic. Now, she didn't want, like a lot of teachers, they don't want to go on the record. She didn't want to have her name or anything else put out there or a school district because, you know, that brings consequences. And that alone, for me, is enough to say these unions have too much power. I mean, have you seen that too, Jack?
Well, that's true. And it manifested itself in Wisconsin, you know, that particular view when, you know, Walker got, you know, right to work there. The teachers union lost 20,000 members. And, you know, more importantly, the districts were given the ability to, you know, go out and shop health insurance on their own. And, you know, there's a lot of teachers there that actually jobs were saved because these districts went in and saved anywhere from several hundred thousand dollars to over $1 million and able to get away from the Wisconsin Education Trust, which is the union-run insurance company. And it's basically the same as MESA, which is the Michigan Education Special Services Association.
Yeah, now let me ask you, Jack, because you seem to be up on this. Didn't the teachers union here in Michigan also had the insurance company? Do all the teachers still use that, or did they allow the districts here in Michigan now to buy insurance elsewhere than the teachers union's insurance company?
That I don't know. So I can't weigh in on that.
Yeah, I remember seeing an article on it, but you're right. It's exactly the same thing going on here in Michigan. The teachers union owns an insurance company, which has been providing insurance for many of the districts, and they're more expensive than other insurance companies.
Right.
And a lot of times it was written into the contracts that they're going to use that insurance company. Now, anytime you give a monopoly to somebody, you're not going to get the best deal. I mean, you're going to lose millions of dollars in the long run. So for me, it's just one more step. Now, what I do hope, and I'm hoping the union members see this, this will give union members themselves, not the union leaders, the option to say, you know what, you're not treating us right, you're not listening to us, do so, or maybe we'll switch unions. I mean, maybe UAW guys will go Teamsters. They have that option now, I would assume. If you work in a small shop of 60 guys and you're not happy being represented by, say, the UAW, you could flop over and go Teamsters if you get a better deal, right? So isn't that competition? Isn't that kind of what we look for in the marketplace?
I was at a company one time that actually did that, and it formed an independent union, and which lasted for a few years, and they went to the Teamsters after that. But certainly employees should have that right. And often with smaller companies, that's a difficult thing. Like, you know, the unions are big, and they're a giant organization, so they bring a certain level of credibility to any element. And it's hard in a small shop for people to, right, to make that change. And maybe this will give them more bargaining power. So I'm as curious as you are to see, does this work out in one way being very favorable to people that are in smaller environments? Certainly at the large automakers, we know which union is going to represent those folks. And I bet it will have very little impact on large-scale employers because,
right,
they have actually, I think – we've seen, as much as we've had, you know, issues that come up in the paper, for the most part, labor and the large automotive, you know, companies have had a very pleasant relationship over my lifetime, I would say. You know, they have had their issues and strikes and things, but they've been able to somewhat, you know, negotiate what they need to with reductions in benefits in some cases and profit sharing and all sorts of other things. But I think in a smaller environment, you're absolutely right. We're going to see people that, you know, they have this union, it's been there for a while, and they say, gosh, we could do better if we looked for somebody else that was more keen to our local interests.
Right. One of the things that always bothers me when I drive past a union hall in the middle of the week, I work for an auto supplier too, so I'll drive past the union hall on a weekday when everyone's still at work, but there's a couple of cars at the union hall, which would be the union leaders. It never fails that they're driving Cadillacs or Continentals, you know, or not kind of Lincolns, I guess. And it always makes me wonder, like, you guys are sitting around there drinking coffee in your nice little office while the membership's out slaving in the plant. You know, where's the parity there? You know, how come you guys are driving Caddies and the union members are driving Pintos, you know, so to speak? So I really do hope that this is good not only for business but also for union members, because I think it will. I think that competition component is a good thing. What are you thinking on the competition side of it, Jack?
Well, you really hit the nail on the head. I mean, the union should be no different than any other business. You know, if you've got a product or service that's superior, they're going to come and buy it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I can see those smaller shops where somebody's going to stand up and say, you know what, we voted for you, but we're not happy with it, and we don't like our money being spent this way. We're not going to pay this month. You know, we're going to hold you hostage a little bit and get the leadership to listen. I think it's a good thing. I don't know that the media has even approached that portion. They're so busy putting the cameras on Bob King. And I wish I could have found that, Derek, that video of him yammering on at the state capitol building, but trying to look like one of the guys, too, in his little woolen cap. But he bothers me as a man who is being very hypocritical. So, well, anyways, they're going to pick up the legislation again on Tuesday, and I guess they'll swap the legislation from house to house. We have a quick track, Derek, from, this is Vincent Vernuccio, who's been a real proponent of right to work in this state, and he was on Stuart Varney earlier this week, and Stuart Varney asked him, let's listen to what Vincent Vernuccio from Mackinac Center has to say. That's track two, I think.
It means, right?
Almost, Stuart. Actually, membership of the union is always voluntary. What right to work means is that workers have the option to pay a union or not and still keep their jobs. Okay. They can always resign their membership, but they're still stuck paying for something that they probably don't want. They
now,
may not want.
In Wisconsin, what really delivered a blow to the unions was that the state would no longer collect union dues. What does the legislation in Michigan say about state collection of union dues for example, municipal workers?
Okay. Well, for teachers, Michigan already has a law that prohibits dues checkoff, but that's just for teachers. What this would do, and it's unlike Wisconsin, is this applies to both the private sector and the government sector unions and says that not only that the state is not going to do the dues checkoff, but that workers can actually choose whether or not they want to pay the union, period. In the soon-to-be 26 forced unionism or non-right-to-work states, a union can actually get a worker fired for not paying them.
Oh, okay. Now, why is Michigan doing this? I'm told that it's because neighboring Indiana became right to work and attracted a whole bunch of jobs, and Michigan's kind of jealous, so they want to fall in line. Is that the reasoning?
Right to work has been kicked around in Michigan for decades. But when Indiana went right to work, Michigan took a look at that and said, hey, listen, right to work states, they have lower unemployment, they have bigger population growth, they have bigger wage growth, and when you factor in cost of living, they have higher wages.
Okay, so again, what you're hearing a lot in the mainstream media is that it's union busing, that it is destroying the unions. I completely disagree with that, and it's not. The federal law states that collective bargaining is a right that each and every one of us has, and that won't change because the state does not supersede that. What, Jack, what are you thinking? How big a part do you think Indiana played in this overall picture?
Probably an equal part with Wisconsin. You look at Wisconsin, and if right to work gets passed here, something similar is going to happen in Wisconsin, in the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. 2 years ago, they had 64,000 members. Today, they have 29. And so the union's still up and running, but they're obviously a smaller footprint.
Right.
And, the same thing, something similar happened to the Wisconsin teachers' unions. They've got about 90,000 members, and 20,000 decided to leave. So, they've had a bit of an impact, too. But, right to work is not going to, kick the unions out. It's just going to, they're still going to be there on a smaller footprint until they create more value for themselves and have more people join.
Yeah, I think that's exactly the key. I think over time you will see those members come back to the union once the leadership is more responsive and, as you said, gives them value for their dues. I mean, John, since Indiana went, and this hadn't even been a year since Indiana went, the Hoosier State added 43,000 jobs, while Michigan has lost 7,300 jobs in that same time period. So that's a huge disparity. You know what I mean? That giant sucking sound is people leaving and going to Indiana and jobs leaving and going to Indiana.
And it's not new. This has been going on since the 1980s.
Yeah. So we're going to go into our hard break. Jack, stay with us if you can, and we'll see you on the other side.
Well, Well, it's that time of year again. Stores filled with Christmas music, trees full of lights, and greetings from distant family in your mailbox. Hi, I'm Dan Martin, News and Operations Director here at Wham Talk 1600, wishing you the very best this holiday season. One of my favorite Christmas traditions is spending time with all my zany relatives every Christmas Eve, eating great food, singing carols, and watching the kids open gifts. From my wife, Kathy, my sons, Joe and Ben, and my cats, happy holidays to you and yours.
Fox News Radio, I'm Carol McHugh. It'll be a somber Sunday for Dallas football fans. Nose tackle Jerry Brown Jr. was killed when the speeding car he was riding in, driven by teammate Joshua Brent, flipped over. Brent's attorney says his client's taking the death of his teammate hard.
The focus from our standpoint on behalf of Josh is Jerry Brown, his family, his loved ones, his friends. This is a tremendous loss to him. This was like losing a little brother.
Jerry Milner, Brent, who failed a field sobriety test, has been charged with manslaughter. Seeking to temper the mood of crowds of angry protesters, Egyptian President Mohamed Morsi has given in to some of their demands.
He has got rid of the so-called pharaoh powers, these powers that put him beyond the writ of the judicial system, put him literally above the law.
Sky News correspondent Sam Kiley from Cairo. Fox News, we report, you decide.
It's time now for Wham! Talk 1600's Community Calendar with Brandon Drake.
Wigs for Kids provides custom fit, age-appropriate wigs at no cost to Michigan children who are experiencing hair loss as a result of cancer treatment and other medical conditions. To learn more about how your contribution can make a difference in the life of a Michigan child, please call Wigs for Kids at 586-772-6656 or visit www.wigsforkids.org. That's Wigs, the number 4, kids.org. The Alzheimer's Association has launched 2 free resources for families impacted by Alzheimer's disease. The Alzheimer's Association's Alzheimer's Navigator is an online tool to help caregivers and people with dementia evaluate their needs, identify action steps, and connect with local programs and services. The other free resource, ALZ Connected, is powered by the Alzheimer's Association and is the first social networking community designed for people living with Alzheimer's and their caregivers. For more information on Alzheimer's disease or available resources, visit ALZ.org or call 800-272-3900. The Leslie Science and Nature Center will have a lantern-lit full moon walk Friday, December 28th from 6 to 7:30 p.m. $6 per person, $21 per family, free for Leslie Science and Nature Center members. Join the Leslie Science and Nature Center for an enchanting self-led lantern-lit walk through Black Pond Woods. Afterwards, you'll warm up around the fire with hot cocoa and stories. For more information about this event and others, visit lesliesnc.org or call 734-997-1553.
You've been listening to the Wham! Community Calendar. To have your event publicized, email community at whamradio.com.
Bayron here reminding you to join me for the coolest music to be had in America today. It's the Bone Conduction Music Show. Hey, my neighbor's dog told me to do this show, and I'd advise you to dial in. We play a lot of cool music that you just can't get anyplace else. Check out the weak singing rock, the hip-shaking soul music, and the industrial strength rhythm and blues. It's the Bone Conduction Music Show.
Join Theron for the rockinest show on the radio. It's the Bone Conduction Music Show. Every Sunday night at 7 p.m. right here on Wham! Talk 1600.
You're listening to The Drift on Wham! Talk 1600. Join in the conversation at 734-822-1600. Now, back to your host, Gary Wellings.
Well, welcome back, and thank you for catching my drift this Sunday morning. In the studio with us, John Hargan-Rader, Libertarian candidate and now columnist with The Current and The Daily Drift. And on the phone with us, Jack Belial. You're still there, Jack?
Still here.
Good. Okay, so we wanted to touch on one other thing, and this is what you missed by not coming in, Jack. We get to have a little repertoire while we're on break here, but we're talking about the public sector portion of this and how it can affect. Now, I was telling John, for me, I've never understood why the public sector employees are unionized to begin with. I mean, if there's a public sector employee out there who can call in and tell me you've been mistreated, please do, but I've never seen a government employee at the Secretary of State's office, at any of the Michigan departments that you go to, who's been mistreated. I mean, they work, what did we say, John, 40 hours a week? What's all the benefits they get?
Well, they have, you know, pretty much the best benefits. We treat public sector employees pretty good regardless.
Yeah, we always have, to my knowledge. Right. I don't remember anyone being mistreated, and at least in my lifetime, I've never been to a Secretary of State's office where they were beaten down taking care of people. They take their breaks, they make us wait, whatever they need to do, but they're certainly not mistreated. And why do they need to be unionized? Jack, do you know something I don't? Is there a reason we should have unions in the public sector?
Well, there's George Meany and FDR would agree wholeheartedly with you. Back in their day in the 40s, 30s and 40s, they were very clear that the public sector is no place for unions.
Well, FDR and I agree on one thing, though. That's a good thing. So, you know.
That's true. That's
he's learning.
So, all right, I guess that we've probably beaten this horse to death at this point. We'll have to wait until Tuesday and see what happens. I'm sure there's going to be a ton of protests from the unions. And it makes me wonder, too. Someone, my son actually, said, well, who are all those people, Daddy, chanting there in the house? I said, well, a lot of those are paid employees of the union who are probably getting $5, $10, $12 an hour to go in there and chant along with them. So, but we'll see what happens on Tuesday, and hopefully this will roll through. Snyder will sign it, and then the two court cases will happen, and we'll see what happens there. Let's move on to the impending doom of the fiscal cliff. If you watch the media, you'd think that the world's going to come to an end, and maybe it will. Maybe it'll be 12/21. Maybe it'll hit us ahead of time. Jack, what's your take on what Barack Obama's stand is? He doesn't want to really cut any spending. He wants to just raise taxes. What do you think about that?
Well, right now you've got the government, the amount of tax they collect is 17% of GDP, and they're spending at a rate of 25% of GDP, and that's something that can't continue too terribly much longer. You go back to raising taxes on the rich, I think that's a relatively small point. Obama's pretty anal about it, and conservatives, don't want to, raise taxes during a recession. As a matter of fact, Obama even talked about that, a couple years ago. But, that kind of gets lost in the big thing is going to be the increases on investments, capital gains, dividends, the 21 new taxes. Start kicking in from Obamacare, and that's going to get into everybody's pocket.
Right, right. Let's backtrack for a moment. We've got a caller on line two, Joe from Dexter. Welcome, Joe. What's your comment or question? Joe? Looks like we lost Joe. So, I'm not doing too well with the phones this morning, am I, Derek? Here he goes. He's calling back good again. I'm a little out of sorts with my calls here. So, yeah, I think when it comes down to the fact that Obama's trying to get that 2% to pay more, what does that work out to? They said it works out to about 8 days of the federal budget. We spend $4 billion a day that we don't take in, John.
It gets worse every day, doesn't it?
It gets worse every day. How in the world you can continue to spend that kind of money with no recourse to anybody? Now we've got Joe back. So let's try Joe on line two. Joe, welcome to the show. We keep losing him. I don't know what. Derek, you're going to have to patch him in. Maybe it's something I'm doing. Let me see if I've got John or Jack on the phone. Jack, are you still there too? I'm losing people left and right. I'm not going to touch the phone from now on. That's what I'm going to do. So, yeah, when you're spending $4 billion a day that you don't have, because we spend a total of 10, our revenues match about 6 of that. I was reading an article the other day from somebody who said, you know what, the money we bring into the federal government right now in taxes pays for our interest on the debt, pays for our Social Security, pays for our Medicare and Medicaid. That's it.
Right.
The entire federal budget for operations.
Right. The discretionary side is about half. And if you look at obligations like Social Security, Medicaid, Medicare, that adds up to a little over half of the federal budget. But those are funded usually separately through the Medicaid, Medicare taxes. The other side of that, all the federal departments added together, including defense, we're borrowing about half of what we consider discretionary.
Right.
And so that can't continue. Obviously, you got to cut something.
Yeah.
And the discretionary side is where you can most easily cut, because one would say that even in present times, Social Security is probably off the table, not just politically, but because it is funded. I mean, we pay for it every day, and one could argue that the 2% rollback, as long as you have a trust fund that still has some money you can draw against, is not hurting us. We have to go out and borrow that money. The other side of the coin is Congress doesn't have a fear of borrowing anymore. They lost that fear as interest rates have stayed low for a long period of time, and the cost of interest on the debt is actually quite minimal. If you look at the total outlay, I think it's still less than $200 billion a year. And, you know, out of $4 trillion, that doesn't tend to stack up. But if interest rates in society started to get back to where they were in the 1970s, it would really put us in a precarious position.
Right. We went back to an 11% interest rate, like my first home was on. You're in trouble.
Yeah, and you can see globally now with the meltdown in Europe and what currency is worth in other areas of the world, there are people that are willing to lend us money for actually 0% interest because we're keeping their money safe from declining in value. If you lived in Greece and you were a multimillionaire, you would put your money into U.S. Treasury securities just because it would be stable. And against your own inflation rate, you'd actually be making money, even though we're not paying you any interest.
Right.
But at least
right.
your money's not disappearing because it has a full faith and credit of the United States, not the Bank of Greece.
Right, right.
So people right now around the world, because of economic instability, you see, are willing to let us hold their money without actually paying them any interest.
Right.
And that's what you see.
Yeah.
But and thank goodness we have the full faith and credit of the United States, and the world still believes in that, and Americans still believe in that, and we still make good on that. And I think that's something Congress needs to see, that the American people really do make good on the full faith and credit of the U.S. We have to put the house in order. And if you don't rationalize spending, you will never be able to tax any society enough to get to where we're at now.
Right, right. Derek, let's go with Joe from Dexter on line two. Joe, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Sorry about that, Joe. I think that's me fat-fingering the phone lines here and dropping you. So my fault.
No problem.
Sorry about that. What do you got to say?
Well, I think the right-to-work thing is wonderful, but I think it's going to be a microcosm of our society in general. I mean, just because they have the right to speak their mind and say where their money goes, the big money interest, the fix is in, just like the government. They do what they want with our money. They come and take our money out of our checking accounts with the barrel of a gun, saying pay or else, and then they do whatever they want to with it. And I really don't see, as a citizen consumer, I don't see that even remotely affecting the cost of a vehicle or whatever else these big union places make. I don't think they're going to go down because of this.
Yeah, yeah, and that's what John was saying, too, and The bigger unions, the UAW, Ford Motor Company, Chrysler, GM, I don't think there's going to be a whole lot of change there. I think you're right on, because it'll be the smaller shops that may change.
I think what one of the things that says is we are not dissatisfied as a nation with what's going on enough, because we're still buying everything they make at the ridiculous prices they charge for them.
Yeah, yeah.
I'd like to say something about the teachers.
Sure.
You were talking to them earlier about the burnouts, the bad eggs, you know, getting rid of them.
Yeah.
My ex-wife has been an Ann Arbor public school teacher for 37 years, and I've had a good chance to look at that whole system from an insider point of view. And there are an element of burnouts and bad eggs and, you know, people who shouldn't be teaching. But the overwhelming majority of the thing that's wrong with the lack of education is the whole teacher's curriculum to become a teacher. They've got teachers who are basically given political courses to get their teaching certificate who are teaching math instead of math majors teaching math. You know, they need the people who actually know, have a command of the subject, teaching them.
Yeah, what causes that, Joe? Is it just does a union keep us from bringing in a teacher because we've already got another teacher in history who needs a job, so we give that teacher first choice?
Well, there's an element of that, because any big in numbers of people, commercial venture or money-making venture, they always hire from within first before they go outside. And I think also, you know, it evolved in the 60s and 70s. If you went to college in the 60s, back when everybody had to take liberal arts curriculum for the first 2 years, and freshman math was calculus, it wasn't arithmetic like it is now. Once you hit the wall of what you could and could not do, like when you started doing the higher level courses in science and math, you realized you were just lost, you said, well, I'm going to go into teaching. That old saying about those who can do and those who can't teach, there's a big percentage of teachers who are in that group.
Right. Wow, amazing.
If you want to really see the waste in the teachers, you know, whole umbrella of employees, the administrators are just, somebody should write a book.
Right, yeah. Well, bureaucrats, and we've seen that time and time again. Joe, thank you so much for your call. Glad you're listening and appreciate your comments. So, We'll consider
care.
That. You take care. Derek, you got Jack online. I'm afraid to touch his phone anymore. Jack, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, I think I've hung up on you twice today.
It's nothing you said, Jack.
That's right. It's just me and my clumsiness. So let's get back to a second. So, Jack, what was your take on why Obama, again, is not? You don't feel that there's anything to really worry about? I agree with you. I think the tax rights... Well, you tell me your thing, because I know what I want to say about it.
Well, I don't want to suggest that there's nothing to worry about with Obama. I mean, there's a lot to worry about there. But as far as increasing taxes on the rich, I don't think that's a major issue other than, you know, just a little political football. But, you know, the biggest problem is, you look back in 2007, you know, the days of, Bush's, you know, failed economy, the deficit back then was $160 billion. And interest rate was, unemployment was 4.4%. I mean, that would elevate the president to sainthood today. In 2008, it got bumped up a little bit when Reid and Pelosi, started, passing their spending bills, and regrettably, Bush signed them all. But, then 2009 hits, and we get, $900 billion worth of one-time stimulus, just one time to juice the economy, and all of a sudden, now that's baked into the budget.
Right. Right.
Every year thereafter. And, baseline budgeting, they just, the government, it's, take what you spent the year before and we're going to add 7%.
Yeah, now that's crazy. That's
insane.
Yeah, it is. That's absolutely crazy because it promotes that mentality that if you don't spend it, you don't need it. So you better go ahead and spend it and we'll tack on that much more in the following year. You know, that's complete and utter nonsense. So in short, Jack, what do you think the Republicans should do? Stay on the ground, or go ahead and let's tax the 2%. What do you say?
Well, I say they bring in. I think they should stay on the ground. Or stay on their ground as far as tax increases, and let Obama try and work his way out of it. I mean, they could call his bluff. And of course, they're going to blame the heck out of him. But
right.
As far as I'm concerned, bring in Ron Paul and. Put him into the presidency and put Bolton as his
foreign
advisor to keep Paul under control. But, he'd have this thing cleaned up in 4 years.
Right. Okay, so let's take a quick break, Derek. And when we come back, I'm going to get John's take on whether the Republicans should stay on the ground, because I'm interested to hear this out of you.
Well, I appreciate that.
We'll catch you on the other side.
It's time for This American Voice with Theron, brought to you by Flying Dutchman Management. Now here's Theron.
The Daily Caller just released an Obama speech made in 2007 while he was still an Illinois state senator. This is a must-hear, must-see speech. And pay close attention to the pandering vocal cadence. It may be too little too late, but you owe it to yourself to hear this speech. It can be heard at thedailycaller.com. Obama goes over the top, lavishing praise on Jeremiah Wright, his former pastor for over 20 years and one of the most racially divisive and flat-out racist pseudo-churches in America. The Trinity Church of Chicago. The Trinity Church of Chicago isn't about Christianity. It's about black liberation theology. And that's about Marxism and racist hatred of America. In particular, what Reverend Wright would term white America. I don't know about you, but I didn't miss this on the first go-around with our community organizer-in-chief, occupying the White House. He conveniently disavowed Wright after that speech, but only so as to throw you off the trail. The trail that leads to where he's been and still is. Sitting, cheering, praising Jeremiah Wright and black liberation theology. You owe it to yourself, your family, and your country to hear the real Barack Hussein Obama. Find this speech and listen to it.
Ann Arbor's Hogback Office Center off of US 23 and Washtenaw Avenue offers a beautiful rolling 5-acre country atmosphere. Your clients will be more than impressed. The professional office suites at the Hogback Office Center range from 960 to 5,000 square feet. They're very competitively priced and your clients will appreciate free parking. Call Susan Watrous at 734-971-4000 for more information or visit FlyingDutchmanMGT.com. The Salvation Army and Wham! Talk 1600 are pleased to present the 6th Annual 1600 Toys for 1600 Girls and Boys Christmas Toy Drive. We need your help to make sure every needy child in Washtenaw County has a happy holiday. Toys are needed for young teens, too. Games, CDs, DVDs, sports equipment, jewelry, and makeup. You can donate a new unwrapped toy at one of our sponsor locations in Ann Arbor, Gold Crown Jewelers, Dixboro General Store, Treasure Mart, USA Hockey, Hogback Office Center, George Meyer Company, in Briarwood Mall, It the Boutique, Ed's Luggage, in Canton, Gale's UPS Store, Mule Skinner Boots Chelsea, in Ypsilanti, Gene Buttman Ford, Michael Vincent Law, City Body, Muriel's Dollhouse and Toy Cottage, downtown Plymouth, PHR Laser Centers Plymouth, The Firing Line Westland. Together, we can collect 1,600 toys for 1,600 girls and boys.
This is the sound of relief. This is the sound of reliability. And this is the sound of a normal day when oil prices return to normal and customers who stayed with Oil Heat can reward themselves with the sound of a pat on the back.
Find out more about today's oil heat at intelligentwarmth.com, brought to you by the National Oil Heat Research Alliance and the locally owned and operated members of the Michigan Petroleum Association.
You're catching the drift. Gary Wellings and the Drift. On Wham! Talk 1600. Call 734-822-1600 to join in the discussion.
Welcome back, and thank you for catching my drift this Sunday morning. We've got John Hargenrader in the studio with us and Jack Belisle on the line. Derek, can you patch him in? I don't want to touch the phone line anymore. So Jack gave us his opinion on what the Republicans should do. He's thinking they should stand their ground. John, let's hear your take. What should the Republicans do in this negotiation with Barack Obama and the Democrats?
Well, I think Bonnier did the right thing to begin with to displace a few of the more eccentric members of the Budget Committee that were Tea Party favorites. I think that shows that he's willing to negotiate at a certain level. I think on the spending issue, they do need to hold their line, that obviously it's not what you make, it's what you spend. And,
right.
And our spending is historically driven by emotion, not by need. And that is natural, but we pay these guys in Washington to be more disciplined than that, and sometimes they have to take a little egg on the face to tell their constituents that, you know, no, we're not going to build that bridge to nowhere. But on the income tax issue, I see it as a broader discussion of how we treat income. As a libertarian, I would say government should not pick winners and losers, and to classify one person's income as one type and another person's as another type, I could go to the extreme and say, well, you know, your income, you accept cash in your left hand rather than your right hand, and that's different, or you take bills upside down, and therefore it's taxed differently. You get into too much of deciding who is doing what and how they do it, and then people spend more time trying to figure out how to manipulate their income to look like it's the lower favored tax rate. And there's a lot of things that are not capital gains that are reclassified as capital gains in today's world with investment banking and whatnot. And that, to me, brings up a host of problems. I pay a full 15% of my income for Social Security and Medicaid and Medicare. My employer pays a portion and I pay a portion. Now, personally, I'm above the Social Security maximum, so it's probably less than that. But most people pay 15%. That's the maximum tax rate for capital gains. So I think in all fairness, that discussion should be separate, but we shouldn't classify income. We should just say income is income, and if we're going to have an income tax, you pay a certain element. And to eliminate the bickering about what is what and how you make it, I would say that a used car dealer buying a car and selling it, that should be a capital gain. Well, it's not treated as such.
Right, right. He's being treated as a profit from
his
business.
That's right. But yeah. In reality, that's a capital gain. He made an investment. He sold it just like a public stock. So if we're going to get into classifying income, it artificially generates a preferred portion of the economy, which is usually more money-changing than industrial. And we want to encourage industrial production in this country.
Right,
so
right.
I think that's one aspect of it. I also have to take issue with the fact that somehow you can level the tax brackets or the way you tax income and reconcile that to today's spending. I don't see where you can make those two meet. The spending is so far above what you can do with raising taxes reasonably on any sector that if you don't address the spending first, you're never going to be able to plug the holes in the boat.
Right.
And that's where the cliff really is. When people are talking about the cliff and the automatic spending cuts, I honestly don't think reaching the fiscal cliff is a problem. I think I'd rather see us reach the fiscal cliff, have a bunch of mandatory cuts go in place, and for Congress to have to backtrack and figure out, well, now what do we do?
Right.
Because I don't think they'll achieve the same level of cuts if they negotiate something before we hit that supposed cliff. The cliff may be a welcome thing for a lot of people.
Yeah. Well, I think I'm somewhere in between the two of you guys because I do agree they need to hold the line and they need to get significant cuts from Obama. The spending is the problem, and anyone who doesn't see that is a complete and utter moron. For me, there's a marketing standpoint to the Republican Party and the conservative right. They have a problem with the public not seeing them in the right light. And for me, I'd say I don't know where you draw that line. I think taxing people over $250,000 more is a huge mistake because I think that's your small business owners. Even up to $1 million, I think, are your small business owners who will pull back if they are taxed even 5% right. or 4% more. But I think the Republicans, in a way, should say, all right, listen, anyone over $1.5 or $2 million can pay more,
mm-hmm.
but we're going to sunset clause it. We're going to do this for 2 years.
Right.
Because we disagree with it, and they need to say this publicly. We disagree with this. We don't believe it's the right move. We will do it to compromise, and when it fails, it's on you because we don't agree with it, and we're doing it because you're pushing us to do it.
Actually, I think I agree with you, except we said it different ways. I believe in a uniform tax rate so that small businessman doesn't see that 33% or whatever jump up to 39%. But I think when you look at that as income, most small businessmen are talking about income. We do have to talk about capital gains.
Right, right.
And that capital gains on millions should be the same as that small businessman.
Right. Well, that's going to be for another show. Jack, thank you so much for coming on and spending time with us this morning. Jack, you still there? Jack, are you still there? No, I lost Jack. I'm the magic fingers this morning. John, thank you for coming in.
Thank you so much, Gary.
For the rest of you, stay informed. Go to thedailydrift.com and stay abreast on the information, and we'll talk about more right to work probably next week.
Excellent.
Take care.